Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Context Machine. It's episode 637. Again, I'm Brian Chaffin.
And since we're stuck in a time loop, I'm still Jeff Gamet. Yes, check us out on our new, yet old, home, contextmachine.io.
I'm wondering, at what point, like 3 years from now, what was still calling in our new home? I mean, I guess if the guidelines haven't been updated.
Yeah. And by guidelines, you mean what you copy and paste every single week.
Well, I changed the episode date and we have a different sponsor. Anyway, you can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon and soon to be Threads.
Also, Brian, we have a sponsored. Brian, yeah. We have a sponsor today.
Oh,
it's
good.
LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, that's fantastic. We'll tell you more about them later in the show. Always appreciate it. Awesome. When they sponsor us.
Me too.
So let's see here. We have a bit of a melange for our first topic before we get on to the
melange. Did you like my Brian impression? I'm doing my Brian speaking French impression.
this checks out. Yes, you. I do like it. The melange. Right. So I had noticed this morning that 9to5 Mac ran a story on a new emerging door lock, home smart lock standard called Aliro. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that real quick, right?
Sure.
All right, it's top end. So this is basically a home smart lock standard that's emerging out of HomeKit in a similar way that Matter came out of HomeKit. Is that fair?
Well, if we're going to be mostly pedantic, mm-hmm. I'm going to say...
Always?
No.
Okay. Then tell us what it is.
You're right in that that Aliro seems to be growing out of HomeKit. But Matter didn't grow out of HomeKit. It grew... with some input from Apple, which includes HomeKit compatibility, but it isn't something that grew out of HomeKit the way Aliro.
I accept your rebuke.
Thank you for doing the setup the way you did, so that I could give you that awesome no delivery.
You're welcome. So Aliro will, according to the 9to5 Mac, is that it is going to... I guess it's kind of coming out of Apple's home key thing that was introduced, and that was that iOS 17.
Is that what we're on now?
Yeah, that's what we're on now.
Was that in iOS 16?
I don't know.
People, here's the problem. Apple has taken their whole operating system that, yes, I'm going down a rabbit hole, Brian.
Yep.
Buckle up. Apple's taken this whole thing with their operating systems and turned it into this thing where it is so difficult to keep track of each version each year. And look at macOS. Different city or location names. No, I can't keep track of that. And then iOS with it. It's Brian. Part of the problem is that I kind of feel like Apple should maybe slow down. And instead of doing these, here's our big annual update, maybe do it every other year instead. Give us some time to figure out what we've got in an operating system, and then just kind of fix it along the way.
2005 is calling it once it's already been back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, maybe if we went back to the way it was in the good old days of 2005, it'd be easier to keep track of features and companies wouldn't feel so pressured to come up with something that was so whiz-bang, you whippersnappers. How was that? I accept your apology.
Yeah. So I used to feel the same way about the Mac being updated every year, and I felt like I never had time to really like sort of settle into it. And then the yearly changes became the new norm, and I just dealt with it.
Oh, I deal with it. I just can't remember what version of an operating system anything is from anymore, nor can I remember the numbers or the names.
That seems like a very poor reason to change the strategy so that you can remember the names. But that could just be me.
Look, the whole thing about making it about me.
Yeah.
I learned it from you.
Oh, right. That's a good point. Okay. So anyway, whenever HomeKey was announced at some point, and HomeKey being a thing for use with HomeKit and smart locks, and apparently HomeKey is going to become Eliro, which is going to be a new standard, and there's 675 companies in the Connectivity Standards Alliance. So theoretically, some of those 675 companies could, in fact, embrace HomeKey, Eliro. But we don't yet know who is going to do it, but I like it.
I'm with you. I really like the idea of having an industry standard for something like this, especially since we're talking about something that relates to home security. And not wanting to have to worry about, is my front door lock going to be bricked with some software update or company policy change next year?
Right. We're going to get to that. but
foreshadowing, people.
There's the flip side of that is, like, I don't have confidence in certainly anything other than HomeKit/HomeKey. I don't have confidence that someone's not going to be able to walk up to my smart lock and just be able to open it. Like, and that's why I don't have a smart lock at this point. That could be a slightly irrational fear, but I don't trust anyone but Apple for this kind of technology.
I'm in a similar boat, but for a different reason.
Okay.
And actually where I live, I do have smart lock now, and it's not by choice. It's where I'm living. All the doors are smart locks. That's just how it is.
Right. And I assume that the landlords retain a smart master key.
Yes,
which
of course.
Frickin' hate, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Instead of going down that rabbit hole, I'll agree and we'll move on. And the reason I trust Apple with this more than other companies is because I feel like Apple is going to do more to honor my investment as a user than other companies. Say Google, for example, where people get really invested in a product that they make, and then they take away features or they abandon it. And then people suddenly are stuck with a problem, which is something that they had been relying on no longer works.
Okay. May I please introduce to the jury exhibit Airport?
That is absolutely fair. However, in that case, what Apple did was stop making hardware. They didn't stop supporting the standard.
Well, they eventually did, right? The Airports can't still be supported.
Oh, dude. I still have the Airport app on my iPhone, and I have actually updated people's space stations for them.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. That's kind of surprising. All right.
I just called you dude.
It's a fair cop. I am, in fact, a dude.
But okay, so my point is where other company. Oh, here's another great example. Canary. They started off making a home security webcam that looked really nice, and their whole thing was, we're going to sell you this really nice product, and we're not going to nickel and dime you on features. And what they did over time was kept chipping away at that, to the point where, like a year or so ago, it became a product that, unless you're willing to pay a large subscription fee every single month, you had a completely worthless camera sitting in your home.
Yeah, that's that is crazy. I will never buy a home surveillance system that does anything other than record locally and has no subscription features at all.
At which is another place where HomeKit is really nice, because there's the whole use HomeKit to record locally only thing. So yeah, I am with you.
Okay, right. So we've got this this new thing called Aliro, and I'm assuming that's it's Aliro. And yeah, it
sounds like Aliro to me.
And it's based on HomeKey, and it's coming soon. It'll use near field communication, Bluetooth low energy, and ultra wide band.
So, Brian, here's my take on this.
Yeah.
And if you think that I'm misinterpreting it, I'm sure you'll let me know. If companies are going to support the Aliro standard, then what that tells me is that, let's say I buy some really cool smart lock, but the company's business model kind of sucks and they go out of business. My lock doesn't turn into a brick on my door, because it's using a standard that allows me to use whatever app with it to unlock the door.
Yeah, including the home app.
Right.
So what's interesting, by the way, is that there are many companies that have already apparently, you know, said, yeah, we're going to do Aliro. But that includes Apple, Google, and Samsung.
That's like the golden triangle right there. You get them in, and that basically solidifies the standard. Yep.
And I don't know that Amazon will have anything to do with this one way or the other. But anyway, that's actually what made me really sit up and take notice of this story, was the fact that the 9 to 5 Mac cited specifically Apple, Google, and Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, huh, Samsung doing something with Apple. Huh. That's interesting.
They're part of Matter as well.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. So the other sort of like a smart home story is this company, and you were telling me, but I wasn't listening. So I don't know who it is, but they did a thing.
Right. And thanks for covering all of that, Brian. Now we can go on to the next topic. All right. So for everyone else, and again for Brian, Chamberlain, garage door opener company, they have this tech called MyQ. So it's MY and the letter Q. And what that tech did.
Can you imagine the Venn diagram of people finding MyQ?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm drawing it right now. Anyhow. Yeah.
I'm saying that people who believe in Q are nuts.
Well, he's omnipotent.
Fair enough.
But so go with ahead. The heart. Yeah. Okay. Anyhow, so the MyQ technology, it lets you add a little device to your garage door opener so that it becomes a smart device. And And that's cool because garage door openers are basically hit a button, sends a radio signal to the motor, and the garage door opens or closes. Add this in, and now you can do all the smart home stuff with it, like remotely open and close a garage door, get alerts if the door opens when you don't expect it to, do geofencing, so as you come home, the door opens, you pull out of the garage and leave, it automatically closes, you know, all that kind of stuff that you want to do with a smart home. So that's been a thing that you've been able to do with MyQ, and they even specifically added HomeKit and Google Home Assistant support. And what they've done over time, not that long of time actually, is dropped HomeKit, dropped Google Home support or Google Assistant support, and now they've shut down their APIs. So third-party tools can't access this device anymore. So basically what they've done is taken this thing that they touted as this this really great way to add smart home functionality to an existing garage door system and turned it into something where the only way to use it is to use their app and then nothing else. You can't like automate anything. Basically, you can use your smartphone as a garage door opener button. And there's a lot of people that have bought into this technology and now aren't able to do the things with a garage door opener device that they had purchased it for and they had been told that they could do.
Firstly, this seems like something that the FTC.
That would be an FTC thing.
Because this is bait and switch 101, and that's super frustrating. Secondly, you know, we give John Keat, our friend, a lot of crap on the show.
Because we love him. Because he deserves it.
Yes, and both of those are true. But this is something that he's been right about for a very long time. He wrote that piece for us at the Mac Observer many years ago saying that the cloud is a lie, arguing that basically cloud services will always go away. So anything that you're relying on for a cloud service will eventually be taken away from you or you'll lose access to it. And this is a prime example of that.
It is. And I feel kind of bad because I'll be validating John with this statement, but here we go. Before I moved into my new place, I took a big box full of smart home devices that no longer worked, not because they wore out or died, but because the company that made them dropped support or went out of business and the device simply turned into a brick.
Wow. So I
took all of that stuff to an electronics recycling center and just got rid of it.
Like, so how much stuff?
It's like a nice size packing box for when you're moving, you know, the kind that's like 2.5-3 feet long.
That's a lot of stuff.
That man. Size. It was a lot of stuff, and that box was pretty much full.
I hope it included your
Alexa. It had bulbs and switches and webcam, like home security webcams, and just all of this stuff, and it was completely worthless. And and it also had, I forgot what it's called. Do you remember years ago? There was a company that made this little thing that would sit on your bookshelf and it lets you create your own cloud server at home. Yeah. Super easy.
I forgot that it existed, but yes.
Yeah. I had one of those in there. And the only reason it was in there was because the company that made it stopped supporting it, I think went out of business.
Yeah, they got bought and things got canceled.
Yep. And the server that you needed to initiate the remote connection to your device, that was gone. So, you know, threw that in the box too.
Again, but, to yeah. John's point.
Yeah, and it was all stuff that that fits nicely in John's statement, the cloud is a lie.
So I have been very active on Threads, as you know. And
you have. I am so proud of you, Brian.
I've been actually active. I've been participating in the conversation, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. My point here is that I'm following a lot of different writers. And so you'll get, there's definitely some repeats in what people post, but people will post, so what do you use to write your books? And mm-hmm. I am flabbergasted at the number of people who mention Google Docs, or, you know, let alone some other third party system that's cloud based. And it's like, and when I see these, I do post something along the lines of, the cloud is a lie. You should, I recommend only using products where, you know, your files are being stored locally, because duh.
I am with you. Here's the thing, though. So many of these people that are saying, oh, yeah, use Google Docs or whatever to do their writing, they are probably people that went through school where they were using cloud-based tools all the time.
Yeah, including Google's tools. But writing a book in Word or Google Docs especially is, to me, a nightmarish hell. Like,
I agree completely. But if that's the only reality you've ever known, it doesn't seem like a hell until you're taken out of it
right.
and shown a better way.
But in addition to that, there is, I will admit that Google Docs is probably not going to be canned by Google anytime soon. But Google
probably not.
Regularly kills off products on a yearly basis. They regularly kill off products. And I mm-hmm. can't imagine trusting my book to Google or any online service. But it is fairly common.
Oh, it's super common. I'm with you. Don't do your writing in a web browser. Anyhow, because that's not what a web browser was designed for. But do it all local. And then if it needs to be in some cloud service later on, then put a copy of it into that.
Yeah. Like, you know, I really like Scrivener for writing. It works for me. And I, some people it won't work for, but whatever. That's not my point. I store my book locally, but then I have a copy that is accessible through Dropbox. But mm-hmm. I primarily have it stored locally, and I think that what I'm trying to say is that I think about John's piece more and more recently about the cloud being a lie. And I don't know that I would have used that wording, because I don't think that wording is going to necessarily make intuitive sense to a lot of people. But his underlying point that cloud services always go away, even everything that Apple is doing will eventually go away. Even Apple, mm-hmm. even Google, even Microsoft, even everything, it will, the services will eventually go away. And then you will, you know, if there will be people who will not be paying attention to the announcement that it's going to go away, assuming there is an announcement, and they're going to lose their stuff. Not to mention this thing that we were talking about with smart home stuff, where you know, products that we buy with for advertised features get changed.
Mm-hmm. Or just simply turned off.
Or simply turned off, yeah.
Oh, that's going to happen to me, and I bet sooner as opposed to later. I have a Harmony remote. Logitech bought Harmony and maintained it for a long time, but But Logitech has shut down the Harmony line.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, this was a while ago. And so they said that the server, because it requires their server to make the link between everything happen, that they'll just leave it running. But what that means is that at some point, it won't be running.
Yeah.
So when do they shut that down? And it's been a few years now where it's just like this, as far as we know, an unmaintained server running somewhere that allows Harmony remotes to continue to function. And every now and then something won't work when I use my Harmony remote. And my first thought is, oh, they shut it down.
Mm, of course. Why are you lining up for that Lucy ball?
Because there's no other ball to line up for. Okay, I will continue to use it until it stops working. And then I'll have to figure out.
Do you hear the grinding noise in the background?
I do not.
Well, it's not
right now. I'm assuming it's your teeth.
No, it was my dog who came up with a Nylabone product, set up shop right behind me, and immediately began chewing in as loud as possible, a kind of configuration of his chewing things. And I'll turn back to look at him, and he'll look up at me like, what? And then I'll turn away, and he'll start chewing again.
I just love this. Yeah. Well, did you hear jingling sounds?
No.
From my side of the studio?
No.
Because Kat, my office manager, she decided to go find some little toy ball that has a bell in it.
Mm, of course.
And has been running around chasing that up and down through the whole studio here, which I know you couldn't see because the soundboard sits high enough that you can't see the floor the side.
Yeah. That's good. All right. So I think the bottom line is that I definitely remain in the camp of that I really don't want to trust any smart home stuff unless it's HomeKit compatible, at the very least.
I am going to back you up on that, and I'm going to say in the next year or two, we should both change that statement to from HomeKit to Matter.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And Alura.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I think it's probably early days for Alura since this stuff was just announced. But I've got hope for Alura.
Yeah. And maybe what they'll end up doing, and I haven't read any of the tech notes on this, but maybe what they'll do is come up with a standard and then just roll it into Matter. Or is that even a thing they can do? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, it is kind of interesting to me that this is sort of being set up as a parallel to Matter, at least according to this 9to5 Mac story. So yeah, I don't really know. That is a good question. It is certainly being pitched as something separate from the CSA. That's the Connectivity Standards Alliance. Right. So I don't know who the backing organization is for Matter, but I'm guessing it's not the CSA per se. It may have many of the same companies, but.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, I have one other to throw into the mix.
Okay.
Because some people may not be aware of this. You're familiar with If This Then That, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So for the people who aren't, If This Then That is a web-based service that lets you take two things that aren't otherwise connected through the internet and make them work together. So an example would be you check the weather report and you want to have some specific thing happen with maybe it fills in a spreadsheet for you so you can keep track of local temperatures.
Yeah.
Or you can do smart home things. Like you can have some specific thing that happened. Like have a website. There's websites that track where the International Space Station is. Make a light in your living room blink when the International Space Station is flying over you.
Or on a practical basis, when the temperature drops to a certain degree, the heater comes on.
Sure. Yes. That's actually how I started using IFT. I used a Wemo plug with a window air conditioner, and I knew at what point the place that I lived in would get too hot based on the outside temperature. So, because there was no way to control the air conditioner in a way that I needed otherwise, I used IFT this then that. When the outside temperature hit 73, it would turn on the Wemo switch, which turned on the window air conditioner.
Right.
Later on, we got smart thermostats, and I was able to control it that way. But there you go.
I should
okay, add, so here's where I'm going with this.
I feel compelled to add that because of the specific thermal qualities of your home, 73 made it much hotter in your house.
Yes. It was a place that was built in 1903. And was fully exposed to the sun on the east, west, and south sides. So it just got hot.
I just felt I was worried that people thought that you were a total wimp. Like it was 73 degrees, and you know, gotta have the air conditioner on. Yeah. So I wanted to give that context.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that still think I'm a wimp, and I'm not going to fight them on that. Anyhow, so here's where I'm going with this. Amazon, their Alexa service, has supported if this and that for a really long time, which allowed people to use the Alexa Home Assistant stuff to bridge together smart home things or other features or things they were doing that wouldn't otherwise be able to come together. And Amazon has decided they're going to stop supporting if this and that. So there is no recourse. It just means anything that you were doing with IFT, the shortcut for if this and that, that involved the A lady, I think at the end of October, that's when it stopped working. And that was it. It was just done forever. So yet another example for John to add to his list and say, see, I told you the cloud is a lie.
That's fair. That's an excellent example. Actually, I think both of your examples today were excellent examples. So on that note, let's talk about the LinkedIn jobs.
Oh, that sounds way more reliable than these crazy dropping off home services. Yes.
So LinkedIn Jobs is a way for you to find and hire people. So you can, when you're advertising on LinkedIn Jobs, you can add your job and you get a purple hashtag hiring frame that goes under profile. That lets people know that you're hiring. And when you have anyone seeing your profile or coming to your profile, they will see that you're hiring. And that seems to be an excellent thing to me. So they've got simple tools like screening questions that make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. So that means that you can set up your screening questions to, you know, filter through the people who are right for the job, which means that you're selecting from candidates that make sense from the beginning. And that is extremely useful. It could be why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Now, the thing that I like most about LinkedIn Jobs is the dashboard, because the dashboard lets you have all your jobs, all of your candidates that you want, it puts all of your information at your fingertips. So again, it's easier to go through this process. And we know that the job market remains very tight. So every advantage you can get is something that's good. Right. If mm-hmm. Every advantage, like an advantage is an advantage. And right now, if you're hiring, you need all the advantages you can get. So LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply, and we appreciate their support.
Yes, we do. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs. Brian, after all that ranting, I want to talk about something a lot more fun. And so I'm wondering, how do you feel about talking about your new book?
This may surprise you, but I'm entirely okay with that.
Okay. I thought you might be, but I felt it might be a little presumptuous on my part to just assume and jump in and start talking about this. All right, everyone. For those of you that haven't picked up on what we've been dropping for quite a while now, Brian wrote a book, sci-fi mystery kind of thing, and it's available for pre-order now, and we'll be shipping as an ebook on November 14th. Is that correct?
It ships next Tuesday as of this writing.
Okay.
That's Tuesday the 14th. And it's available for pre-order. And I'm going to be honest, if you pre-order, what that'll do is allow me to hit the sales week with a burst of sales, which means that I will be higher up in the rankings. And once you get higher up in the rankings, you have a better chance of staying up in the rankings. So if you would like to get my book, definitely pre-order, please.
I think that sounds awesome. So, Brian, not everyone knows what your book is about. Tell me, what is your book is about? What is it titled?
It's titled Accidental Intelligence. It's a sci-fi book set in the year 2139. Mason Truman is a PI, and he gets hired to find a missing kid, and it drags him into the middle of an AI conspiracy to destroy humanity. And he's got until Saturday to stop it.
Okay. I love the whole premise. And just so everyone knows, I have read this book in multiple forms as it has evolved to the point that it is now. So, when I say, hey, I really like this idea, it's because I read the book and I know I really like it. So the whole thing with AI, first, Brian, I think is kind of cool and
timely
and kind of prescient on your part, because you were writing this book well before the current interest in AI had cropped up.
Yeah, I've worked on this book for a very long time. I shopped it out to agents for a very long time. I eventually decided to self-publish. These AIs are not like the AIs that we're worried about today, because the AIs that we're worried about today, it's glorified. I don't know what's something cute and clever to say about the AIs. Glorified copy artists.
I'd say glorified copy machines.
Yeah, there we go. They're glorified copy machines. And the AIs in my book they're sentient. They have personalities. They are partners with the Terran Republic. They have they help with some state security stuff, and because it's a surveillance state, because they can. And yeah, it's kind of a mess up in 2139. Yeah, there's a lot that I feel like I was pressing about that has been sort of creeping up on us in reality.
Yeah, and I found that to be very interesting. And I'm going to play off that a little bit. What was the impetus? What was the inspiration for you for writing this book?
That's funny. I went on a date with a writing date with a woman, and I wrote a short story, and I got to the end of that short story and was faced it was a sci-fi short story, and there was a soldier, and he was essentially had this data cube that had data on it, he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the short story ended. And I sort of became obsessed with figuring out what was on the data cube. And I thought about it off and on for years, and then eventually decided that the character that I needed to find out what was on the data cube was a PI.
And that PI is Mason Truman?
Yeah, that's Mason Truman. He's cousin to the soldier who is Andrew Bowers. Andrew's story is relatively minor in the story, but this is definitely a story that follows Mason.
Well, tell me a little bit about Mason without any spoilers, because I find Mason to be a wonderfully interesting character, and I want everyone else to hear a little bit about him too.
Mason is a guy who, in my future, the AIs delivered something called a DocBot that essentially works miracles on us. And our lifespans have been increased to they're still finding out, because this is only 120 years from now, but lifespans are currently projected to be 150, 160 years. And I figure in that kind of environment where people stay looking much younger than they are for a very, very long time, that careers would probably start being a 20-year thing. Like 20 years, you have a career, but then you can go on and do something else. And I thought about that from the standpoint that it used to be the working 20 or 30 years and then you die was the thing. Mm-hmm. So how would society evolve in this environment where people can live to be, who knows how old? We don't even know yet in the book. So Mason was a teacher. He's a history teacher. And then 20 years later, he retired and he became a PI. And so he's 52, but he basically looks like he's 30, like most people do. And what was the question?
I wanted to learn more about Mason.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to point something out that I find to be very compelling about the Mason character. He seems to be very reluctant to be the hero. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. He always does what's right when he's forced to. And he always does what's right for his clients. But then that sort of has led to a situation where he's sort of, his clients are sort of self-selecting to not need him to do what's right. And, he doesn't want to. So, I call it a functional dystopia, because it's very horrid to me. The pervasive and massive surveillance is just everywhere. We've talked about here on the show, we've talked about surveillance capitalism for a long time. But now, we've got surveillance capitalism and actual surveillance state, which is unparalleled to anything that we know. And I think that's horrid. But I feel like the people who are living through that would probably just sort of take it for granted. And Mason, he very much just wants to, do what he needs to get by, and that's good enough.
And yet he's in the situation where doing just enough to get by means stepping up and doing his part to essentially save the world.
Yeah, he finds himself in a situation where all of his support structures are, chipped away at until, he's got to step up and do the right thing. And that's his journey. Will he do it?
I love it. Okay, so part of his journey right now involves being on social media. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I do have a Threads account. I have a Twitter account too, but we don't talk about Twitter. I've got a Threads account for Mason where he's tweeting from the year 2139. He sometimes laughs at us and, you know, sort of tells us about his the cases he's on and you know, his sort of daily life. And I would, you know, love it if people followed. It's Mason Truman PI. And I would love it if people ended up asking him questions. That's my goal here. Like, I want, my goal for releasing this book is to have people interested enough to reach out to Mason.
Yes. Do you mind if I read everyone just a little snippet from the synopsis of the book?
Sure.
Private Detective Mason Truman is being yanked around by invisible strings, and it's an AI doing the yanking, Miranda. She's subtle, crazy, and she thinks she can see the future. Okay, see that right there? That's enough to hook me in.
Good.
And
my work is done.
And yeah, and she hooks in Mason, and off the story goes.
Yeah, it's I think it's a fun story. I think it's an interesting world, and I've gotten a couple of reviews from people I don't know that are up on Goodreads, and they like the book. I don't know. People seem to like it.
All right. Well, I'm going to read just the last little bit of the teaser for your book. Mason and Miranda have one chance, a way of bottling up the rogue AIs. All Mason has to do is lure the conspirators to the right spot in a sim world. That's how Mason learns that when Miranda said she needed help, what she meant was bait.
Dun, dun, dun.
I love that. So, Brian.
Yeah.
Where can people get your book and how much will it cost them?
The book is currently available for pre-order on Amazon, Kindle, Apple Books, and Barnes & Noble for Nook. And I'm also trying to work on a hardback for people that want it. Really, it's for Sam. Sam wants a hardback. But it's $4.99. The hardback will be much, much, much more expensive because that's the way that works. But it's $4.99, and it is on sale for pre-order right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Brian, thank you for indulging me and letting me talk with you about your new book, because I am genuinely excited for people to get this in their hands. After being part of the process for so many years of watching the book evolve, I'm just so excited for other people to get to read it.
Yeah, you know, have you read the acknowledgments yet?
No, because I haven't seen the final version.
I thank you and Sam for being my biggest cheerleaders. I don't think I would have finished this book without the both of you.
Well, I'm genuinely happy that I got to be part of the process.
Thanks, man. You're the best. You're the very best. So yeah, if you have any questions about the book, please feel free to ask. My site redesign is up, and it's all centered around the book now. So yeah, if you have any questions about it, let me know. And that's at geektales.com.
That's great.
Or you can ask me on Instagram or Twitter too.
You can ask him on Instagram or Threads.
Thank you. Good Lord. I hate that. So I guess that's, is that it? Are we done?
Yeah, we're done. Hit the button.
All right, folks. That's it for this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com.
No, keep going. You're doing great.
These guidelines have not been updated. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Broom, recorded just for this show. And I think that's all for this week. We want to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring us.
Yes, we do.
LinkedIn.com/HTM. Where you can post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And on that note...